श्रील प्रभुपाद की जाए। इट इज बाय श्रील प्रभुपाद मर्सी दैट वी ऑल आर हियर। समहाउ गॉट टू नो अबाउट द इम्पोर्टेंस ऑफ स्पिरिचुअल लाइफ, got to know about another reality beyond this material nature. And we got to know how wonderful that reality is. Whatever we actually desire is all there, existing just like that. In this material nature, what does everybody want? Everybody wants to be immortal. No one wants to die. And in that world, in that nature, no one dies. Everybody wants to be happy. There everybody is happy. Everybody wants all his desires to be fulfilled. There every desire becomes fulfilled. Every desire becomes fulfilled. Such wonderful arrangement. There are trees there. And you can go and ask there something. You can go to the ask and the tree will automatically supply that. It's true. It's real. From our mundane perspective, it may appear that, oh, how will it be possible? How can a tree supply everything? But that's it. Like you just desire and it will be fulfilled. Whatever you desire will become reality. And Srila Prabhupada informed us that we all came from there. That is our actual home. And somehow he got stuck here, and Srila Prabhupada is showing us how to get out of this world and go back there. Now if we want to go back there, then what do we have to do? We have to act according to Srila Prabhupada's instruction. What Srila Prabhupada said, we have to just do that. If we do that, then yes, we'll end up there. Srila Prabhupada says, go to the station, buy the ticket. Srila Prabhupada also tells us that such and such vehicle is waiting for you. Just go to get in there, that vehicle will take you to the station. Then you go to the station, Prabhupada says, okay, go to the counter, buy the ticket. Then Prabhupada says, go to such and such platform and get onto the train. And then Prabhupada says, get into such and such compartment and your seat is reserved there. And all you have to do is just get into the train. And the train will take us to that destination. Srila Prabhupada made all the arrangements for us. So we simply have to be obedient to Srila Prabhupada's instructions. If we think, well, I mean, I know better. I don't really need to follow Srila Prabhupada. I can just follow my way. Then we'll be in trouble. So this is the wonderful spiritual arrangement that Srila Prabhupada made for all of us. Now we simply have to be obedient and follow the process. And then Srila Prabhupada prescribed certain literatures and said, follow them, read them and accept them. So we read those literatures. And how should we read those literatures? We should read those literatures with full conviction that whatever is written there is the truth and nothing but the truth. If we ever think that, well, I mean, it's not really, it doesn't really make sense, or it's too fantastic, no, it can't be real. It can't be true. Then we'll be in trouble. So when we read these literatures, we have to be very, very submissive to the context of those literatures. Whatever is there is the truth, the absolute truth. And then Srila Prabhupada gives various informations. The information that Prabhupada gives is there is a Supreme Personality of Godhead. That means there is a person who created everything. Is it difficult to accept that point, that somebody created that everything? Even we can ask a child that did somebody make everything? What will be his answer? That fancy watch that you're wearing, did anybody make it? What will you say? If I say, no, nobody made it. It just fell from the sky. Can you accept that statement? Nobody made the watch. It just fell from the sky. Or someone was cooking a soup, and from that soup came the watch. The primordial soup. Will anybody accept it? If somebody says that there was a big explosion and the watch appeared, will you accept it? If somebody says that there is there was an accident, two cars had a headlong collision, and as a result of that, the watch appeared. Will anybody accept that? And it applies to everything. Just a watch was just a consideration. What about the water bottle here? Namraj, just hold it up and show it to everybody. Did somebody make it? Do you know who made it? No, you don't know who made it. But your common sense says that somebody made it. If somebody says nobody made it, it won't make any sense. Did somebody make this building? Did somebody make this road? Did somebody make this car? The answer will be yes, yes, yes. Did somebody make this hill? Do you know who made it? No, but at least we have to accept that somebody made it. Did somebody make this planet? Did somebody make all the stars and luminaries in the night sky? Did somebody make the sun? Did somebody make the moon? We have to accept that somebody has made it. We may not know, but we have to accept with our common sense that somebody must have made it. Now, when it comes to it, like, who made it? If we really become inquisitive, who made it? Then what should we do? We can do one thing. Like, we can take the watch. So who made the watch? You can take the watch and dismantle, break it into pieces and try to find out the maker. Will you be able to find out from just by looking at the watch? Probing into the watch? No. What would be the best way to approach about the watchmaker? easiest way will be, you'd see the name of the brand name and go to Google and make a search. It'll come up. And when the name comes up, the question on a Google is not right. If you want to verify, then go and find out. It says, yes, there is a company, yeah, Longines. Address is Geneva, Switzerland. Bertholdstrasse. You go there and you see that yes, that is the place where they made this watch. So similarly, if we want to know about the maker, then instead of going into this creation and try to analyze, the safest approach will be to go to somebody who may have the information, who may know who is the maker. That is the spiritual search. That's how actually spiritual search begins. How many of you, before you came to ISKCON, started to search for the maker? Yeah. And then what happened? You studied many books. You thought you'll probably find out. But then you came across Srila Prabhupada's books. And then it occurred to you, this is the real information. The most authentic and most convincing information. And in turn we can see, what did Prabhupada do? Prabhupada did not give some concocted ideas. Prabhupada actually directed us to some books. And we could see that those books have been accepted by all the authorities on this subject. Bhagavad Gita. In India, you'll notice one thing, the sadhu, whether he's a Mayavadi or whoever he is, Mayavadi or if he's an impersonalist or a personalist, whether he's a Shaivite or a Vaishnav, whether he's a Shakta or Saura, he always carries a Bhagavad Gita. Everybody who is interested in spiritual life in India carries Bhagavad Gita. Not only that, you'll find in all the houses practically, there is a Bhagavad Gita. Whether they read it or not, that's another thing. But at least the Bhagavad Gita is there. You know where they keep the Bhagavad Gita? In the altar. They wrap it up with a red silk cloth and keep it there and worship it. That is the problem. They worship it, but they don't really study it. But Srila Prabhupada came and gave us the information. Bhagavad Gita as it is. And you find that nobody reads Bhagavad Gita, or you find most of the Bhagavad Gita that has been explained and translated and explained are not really bona fide. That's the problem. Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita in today's world is the most popular bona fide version. And in Bhagavad Gita, what do we find? We start to read Bhagavad Gita. Then what Prabhupada explains? Prabhupada explains that there is, or what does Bhagavad Gita explains? It's not what Prabhupada explains. What is Prabhupada revealing from Bhagavad Gita? Matter, and beyond matter, there is the spirit soul. The informations about spirit soul. Then, the supreme personality of Godhead, the supreme spiritual personality. Then Prabhupada explains the nature of the place where we live, the characteristics of this material nature. Then Prabhupada informs us, beyond this material nature there is a spiritual reality. And then Prabhupada takes us to Srimad Bhagavatam, even more detailed informations there. the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His activities. Supreme Personality of Godhead, His different incarnations. And the relationship between the Supreme Personality of Godhead and His incarnations. And then it takes us to the spiritual sky. In this way, all kinds of informations have been available to us. At least today, to most of us, if not to all of us, there is no doubt about the existence of the Supreme Person. There is a Supreme Person. And He is inside and outside. From outside, He is watching us. From outside, He is controlling everything, everybody. And from inside also, He is watching us. Where is He situated? He is situated in the core of our hearts. Everybody's heart. And from there, He is actually watching us. He is monitoring us. He is supervising us. And He is fulfilling our desires. He is granting some desires and He is rejecting some desires. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is real. And that personality from time to time comes to this material nature. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, He comes here. And He allows us to deal with Him. We can directly see Him. When He comes, we can directly see Him. And not only when He comes, we can see Him. Prabhupada showed us the way that if we develop our relationship with Him, then in course of time, we will be able to see Him. He will appear to us. And He is watching our activities and He is going to reward us accordingly. When He is pleased with us, He will reward us. When will He be pleased with us? When He sees that we are with full faith accepting Him. And that Supreme Personality of Godhead is Krishna. Srila Prabhupada came and gave us that very clear understanding. And as I say, that Prabhupada did not concoct something. Prabhupada did not fabricate something. Prabhupada is simply repeating what is there in the scriptures. That is the qualification of a bona fide teacher on this subject. He says something which is substantiated by the evidence from the scriptures. Praman, evidence, proof. How do we know that there is a soul? The scripture says. And now, another way of looking at it is that whatever is presented in the scriptures can be justified or verified by a common sense. As I just gave the example of a maker of a watch. It's a common sense approach. What does a common sense say? Similarly, let us see our common sense approach. Let's make that approach. What's the difference between a dead body and a living body? That's a common sense approach. We've seen dead bodies and we have seen living bodies. Now, what makes a certain body to be alive and some other body to be dead? What is the common sense answer to that? Somebody was living, all of a sudden he dies. What do we say? We can say that he is dead, but oftentimes we don't say he is dead. We say he passed away. He passed away. Or we say he left. So that means the difference between a dead body and a living body is the presence of a person. He, somebody. So who is that he? That's a very common sense approach. Now through our common sense we may not find the answer, but the answer is there in the scriptures. Tatha dehantara praptir. Dehi nashmin yatha dehi. Kshetra kshetragya. So these are the proofs from the scriptures. Statements or informations from the scriptures. So, the Vedas, the Vedic scriptures are giving us detailed, authentic informations about that reality. So, we can use our intelligence. Common sense means using our intelligence. Like a person who doesn't have any intelligence, he cannot have any common sense. He doesn't have any sense. He is nonsense. But those who have intelligence, they can use their intelligence to figure out what actually makes sense. So the Supreme Person, in this way, from the scriptures, we can get the informations about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Srimad Bhagavatam is giving a very, very clear understanding. Then there are other scriptures. Brahma Samhita, another very wonderful scripture, which is the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Brahma Samhita is giving the informations about Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. This statement from Srimad Bhagavatam has been substantiated by Brahma Samhita. So all these scriptures are not contradicting with each other, but they are conforming each other. Bhagavatam says, Ete Changsha Kalapungsha Krishnastu Bhagavan Swayam. And Srimad Bhagavatam is saying the same thing. Ishvaraha Parama Krishna Satchidananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govindaha Sarvakarana Karanam. Vedanta Sutra is confirming that. Upanishads and Purans are confirming that. So this is how this knowledge is established, and it is a matter of making a systematic approach to the subject. The informations are there. Informations are there. Now it's up to us to receive the information in a proper way. And as we receive the informations, we become situated in knowledge. Knowledge is actually receiving informations. You get the information, now you know. When you don't have the information, you do not know. So Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That has been established in all different scriptures. And Srila Prabhupada gave us Krishna. Become a devotee of Krishna. Although we are known as Vaishnavas, Vaishnavas generally means devotees of Vishnu. Although we are known as Vaishnavas, but actually, we are something more than a Vaishnavas. We are, okay, in this respect, we can consider that there are those who are the followers of Vishnu or devotees of Vishnu, they are Vaishnavas. Those who are devotees of Krishna, they are Karshnas. But what are we? We are actually Gaudiyas. And who are the Gaudiyas? Those who are the devotees of Srimati Radharani, they are Gaudiyas. We are devotees of Srimati Radharani. So Vishnu, Krishna and Radha Krishna. Radha Krishna. Not directly to Krishna. Via medium, through the mercy of Radharani, we are approaching Krishna. And that mercy of Radharani is personified in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu actually has given the perfect spiritual understanding. He took us to the highest realm, highest region of the spiritual sky. Sometimes people think that, oh, we are so puffed up. We think we are the best. That's why we don't need to broadcast that we are best. Those who are situated in knowledge, let them figure out who is the best. And for ourselves, let us figure out what is the best and then accept it. Practically ever since I joined ISKCON, I had been making a challenge that this is the best that I have found so far. If there is something that is better than this, please come and give it to me. I'll give this up and accept it. But so far I couldn't find anything better than this. I'm open. If something better than this, then yes, I'll accept it. But this is the highest. And that's why I'm here. That's why you all are here. It is not a matter of sentimental attachment. Krishna consciousness is a business. And what is business? Business means profit. Wherever you get the best deal, you buy it. So, similarly, in Krishna consciousness, we are in a business. Where do we get the best? There are two considerations in business. Best product at the lowest price. The best product at the lowest price. And that's what we found. The price we pay is so insignificant. But the benefit that we get is the highest. It has been so systematically established. And that is what we are here for. We are not here to make any comparison, or we are not here to get into any competition. We are here simply to find the ultimate benefit for our spiritual life, for our spiritual involvement. The ultimate benefit for our spiritual involvement. And that's why we don't have any conflict. There are different types of spiritual practitioners. They're impersonalists. We don't have any problem with them. Because we know that that impersonal Brahma Jyoti is the bodily effulgence of Krishna. So those who are following that path, those who are worshipping Brahma Jyoti, they are actually also worshipping Krishna. Krishna's bodily effulgence, they are worshipping. Somebody is a Shakta, worshipping Devi, the Shakti of the Lord. We don't have any problem because they are worshipping the external energy of the Lord in the form of Durga, Kali, etc. There are Sauras, the worshippers of sun. The sun is Jat Chakshuresha Shavita Sakala Grahanam. So it's also Krishna's eye. So they are worshipping Krishna. Krishna's eyes. Somebody is a Shaivite. He is a also worshipping Krishna, because Krishna himself transformed himself into Lord Shiva. So because we have the total understanding, we don't have any conflict with others. But those who are situated in lesser platform with inferior knowledge, less informed individuals, they may have some problem. But we don't have any problem with them. And then it comes to the incarnations. Sometimes, as I was mentioning yesterday, like there was a Ram Bhakta when I was young, when I was very young, in our neighborhood there was a person who was a Ram Bhakta, and he was always glorifying Ram, and when you glorified Ram, he was very pleased. But if you called to, just told him Radheshyam, he'd get very upset. So, he's accepting Ram, but he's not accepting Krishna. Why? Because he doesn't understand that there's no difference between Ram and Krishna. Whereas we do not have any problem with Lord Ramchandra. Because Ramadi Murti Shukala Niyamena Tishthan. Lord Ramchandra is an expansion of Krishna, Kala. Amsa Kala Kala Niyamena Tishthan. Nana Avataram. Different incarnations are Krishna's Amsa and Kala. Like, what is the difference then? Srila Prabhupada has explained this point in this way, that there is a high court judge. You see him in the court, you see him as the judge. Then in the evening when you go to the club, how do you see him? Do you see him as a judge? No, you see him as Justice so-and-so. And you see that he is dealing with his friends. Then you go to his house. How do you see him? Do you see him as a judge? No, you see him as somebody's father, somebody's husband, somebody's son. The same person, in different places, his appearance differs. Same person. So similarly, Krishna, at some point, he appears as Ram. At some other situation, he appears as Nrisimha. In some other situation, he appears as Varaha. In some other situation, he appears as Kurma. In some other situation, he appears as Matsya, and so forth. Same person, no difference. Same personality. That's why sometimes when you see the pictures of Dashavatar, you see like that. Different incarnations, but the head is Krishna's head. To indicate that all are Krishna. Is Krishna. Even though he appears as Meena, he's Krishna. Although he appeared as Kurma, he's Krishna. Of course, not Nrisimhadev's face is not Krishna's face. But I mean, if you look carefully, you'll see that after all, he looks like Krishna. And so in this way, it's Krishna who appears in different forms. Like those forms are known as pastimes. He appears in different ways to enact different pastimes. Enact. This phrase is quite relevant here. Because he's acting. He's acting. Just as on a stage, the actors act. Jadunath can explain it very quick. Very nicely. And one of these days we'll see him also act. So the Supreme Personality of Godhead acts. And his pastimes are like a drama. They're dramas. Now what is the purpose of a drama? Originally, now it is of course dramas are, or movies are simply for entertainment. But originally, all the dramas were meant to make, to convey certain message, to teach us something. That was the purpose of the dramas. So teach us something. So the Lord comes and plays His drama on this stage to teach us something. And what is that He is teaching? He is teaching through His action. Let us get into what is action like. What is His action like? His action is, He Himself admitted, Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. To protect His devotees and to annihilate the demons. That is the basic theme of the drama. Paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha dushkritam. And through that drama, what is it teaching us? You're observing and you're seeing Krishna is killing the demons and Krishna is protecting His devotees. Now, after seeing that, what do you want to do? Do you want to become a demon and be killed by Krishna? No. You recognize the importance or the benefit of becoming a devotee. That if you become a devotee, then Krishna will protect you. So become a devotee of Krishna. So that is the theme of the drama. And you will notice the leelas, Krishna's pastimes, has all the characteristics of drama. Most of Krishna's pastimes have these characteristics of a drama. Who is expert in drama here? Jadunath is a drama person. Kapila is a drama person. What makes good drama? Conflict. Right. Conflict. A good drama means conflict. The bigger the conflict, the better the drama. Right? I forgot to mention about Jai Chaitanya. He also makes drama. Chandrasekhar also. There are so many actors here. And so, drama means conflict. Now, how does the conflict take place? Conflict takes place between two opposing parties. Those opposing parties, one party is right and the other party is wrong. Right? Those who are right, they are known as protagonist. And those who are wrong, they are known as antagonist. Heroes and villains. Right? So good drama must have this aspect. Hero and villain. So in this drama, who is the hero? The Lord Himself is the hero. And who is the villain? The demons are the villains. Those who go against Him. And there is a conflict. So good drama must have conflict. Therefore, Lord's pastimes has a lot of conflict. You take the pastimes of the Lord and you'll find that. Then there are different mellows, an exchange of mellows. There are how many mellows are there? So this is also another part of drama. Another aspect of drama. The dramas are based on 12 mellows. The 5 principal mellows and 7 secondary mellows. And the formation of the drama is an exchange or interweaving of the 7 secondary mellows. Those mellows are hasya, laughter. In a good drama you'll find a comedian. Right. Adbhut, surprise. Veera, chivalry. Rodra, anger. Bibhatsa, ghastly. Bhayanak, frightening. Korun, pathos. So now we can see that these pastimes, of Lord's pastimes, two of his pastimes are very well appreciated, well known. Those pastimes are Krishna's pastimes. Lord's pastimes as Krishna and Lord's pastimes as Ramchandra. Now, the drama, Lord Krishna's pastimes we are seeing, there are antagonists, so many antagonists. Kamsa is there, Shishupal is there, Jarasandha is there. And in Vrindavan pastimes, there are so many of these demons who had been coming and causing so much trouble for Krishna and the residents of Vrindavan. In that pastime, sometimes we see even Indra is an antagonist. And he's smashed. No matter whoever you are, you go against the Lord, you'll be smashed. The demons, they're killed, but those who are not so demoniac, but conflicting with the Lord, they're being chastised, they're being corrected, they're being rectified. So, now what's the difference between Krishna's pastimes and Ramchandra's pastimes? Krishna's pastimes are Krishna as the Leela Purushottam. Leela. What is the purpose of the Leela or his pastimes? His own pleasure, his own enjoyment. And in that pastimes, he doesn't care about what others think about him. No other social or moral consideration. Krishna doesn't care what people will think. He simply wants to dance with the gopis. He is not even married to them. And he does all kinds of things. Apparently it will be all very immoral act. Stealing the young girl's clothes. When they are bathing. I mean apparently it's very... one doesn't expect the Supreme Personality of Godhead to act like that. Like sometimes people become critical about Krishna. Why Krishna did this? Why Krishna did that? That's where Krishna's pastimes has been kept as a secret. Because less intelligent people will not understand that. But when we see that it is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who is acting like that, then everything becomes perfectly adjusted. He can do anything. Because he's the Supreme Controller. In this respect, I recall one incident. Once a person was asking Srila Prabhupada why Krishna acted in such an immoral way. He did this, he did that. The Prabhupada was trying to explain to him that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He can do anything he wants. For him, in his activities, there is no question of immorality. But the person would not accept it. He just kept on insisting. Krishna's activities were immoral. Because Krishna was not married. Krishna was dealing with unmarried girls in this way. So his point was that why didn't Krishna get married to the gopis and have the pastimes in this way? Prabhupada also tried to explain to him about the parokya rasa. The higher form of love, the more intense loving relationship is when there is no such social consideration of marriage and other things. When there is some social, some kind of hindrance in their union. When they overcome that hindrance, overcome that obstacle, that makes love affair even more exciting. So that is the basic answer of Krishna's pastimes, parokya rasa. But the person just kept on insisting. So finally Prabhupada just told him that your relationship with your wife is immoral. Because you have stolen Krishna's property. You are talking about morality, but you actually have stolen Krishna's property. So that is what we have to understand. Let's look at it on the other way around. Like if somebody's wife becomes a devotee of Krishna, does he mind? Like we see that married women are becoming attracted to Krishna. Is there something wrong in that? Why not? Because the relationship with Krishna is the ultimate relationship. Because Krishna is the supreme proprietor. Once I came across the statement that Krishna is the husband of the husbands. So naturally, the wives are also Krishna's property. So ultimately, Krishna is the supreme proprietor. So when a proprietor deals with his possessions, there is nothing immoral. But less intelligent people do not understand that. Therefore, Krishna, we have to go into Krishna's pastimes as Ramchandra. Perfect relationship, perfect activities, perfect pastimes from the moral point of view. Ramchandra is absolutely moral. His activities are absolutely moral. As Ramchandra, he is just married to only one wife. Kshatriyas could take more than one wife. Lord himself has two potencies. Shridevi and Bhudevi. You have seen, if you go to the temples, and especially in South India, when you see the Narayan, you see two Shaktis on two sides. One side is Shridevi, Lakshmi, and on the other side is Bhudevi. In Krishna's pastimes also, the same thing is there. In Dwarka Leela, one side is Rukmini, and the other side is Chandravali. In Krishna's Vrindavan pastimes also, Rukmini, and other side is Satyabhama. In Vrindavan pastimes, one side Radharani, and one side Chandravali. But in Ramchandra's pastimes, he doesn't have Bhudevi aspect. He is just with Sri Devi, Sita Devi, Lakshmi Devi. And so this is the point that Ramchandra's pastimes are absolutely perfect from the social moral point of view. Why? Because he is Marjada Purushottam. He has come to establish the principle of morality. He has come to establish the principle of dharma. He has come to establish the principle of the Vedic scriptures. So in this way, Lord Ramchandra's pastimes are very different from Krishna's pastimes. But who is Ramchandra? Krishna himself. Krishna himself. There is no difference. It is Krishna. But he is playing on the stage like a drama. Let's go back to the drama again. In a drama, the actor is playing the role. The actor is the same person, but the role that he is playing is different. So Krishna is playing the role of Ramchandra. That is the Leela. And another consideration of drama here that I want to bring up. In drama, there is a consideration of suspension of disbelief. When you are watching a drama, then your disbelief is suspended. That means you have to accept, if you really want to relish the drama, you have to accept whatever is presented as real. I mean, you can't, at the time of drama, watching the drama, you can't question, why is this? Why is this not that way? This is not right. So you can't have that consideration. So if that is the case with drama, then what to speak of Lord's pastimes? So, the consideration of disbelief, you have to throw it away. There is no room for disbelief when it comes to watching Lord's pastimes or getting into Lord's pastimes. You'll find in Ramayana, we'll come to that, Ramchandra dealt with 14,000 Rakshasas. Kshara and Dushana had 14,000 soldiers, Rakshasa soldiers. Very expert in warfare, fighting. They could fight with even the demigods. But Ramchandra alone killed those 14,000. Normally people will say, how is it possible? 14,000 soldiers and he is fighting alone. How is it possible? No question of disbelief here. You have to accept it. The description is there. How Ramchandra did it, the elaborate description is there. So just accept those description and accept it as a fact. There is no question of doubting it. He is fighting with Ravan, with the monkeys. Ravan has the most sophisticated weapons. Can you imagine how sophisticated his weapon must be? Because he was fighting with the demigods. Like demigods are from another plane. And they are so, like, I mean, their weapons are, I mean, compared to the demigod's weapon, the most powerful nuclear weapon will be like a firecracker. So that is, and he is able to fight with the demigods. So how expert and how well equipped, how sophisticated soldiers they were. And Ramchandra's side is monkeys. They don't have any weapons. They're fighting with stones and boulders, trees, uprooted trees. And his army defeated Ravan. Now, is it real? If you have any doubt, then don't get into Ramayana. You have to accept it. So as I said, this suspension of disbelief is a very important factor while we are dealing with Lord's pastimes. And let's again use our common sense. The personality who just glanced at the material nature and the whole creation came about, if he is so powerful that just by looking at something he can create the entire creation, material creation, what can be impossible for him? One biblical consideration, God said, let there be light, and there was light. He can just say, "There, let there be light, and there was light." So for him to wipe out 14,000 Rakshasas, what's the big deal? He doesn't even have to take his bow and arrow to fight with them. He can just say, finished. They all will be finished. So that is how powerful, that is how inconceivable his power is. So, but he came and he acted like an ordinary human being. Ramchandra. So, the most authentic description of Lord Ramchandra's pastimes is Valmiki's Ramayana. Valmiki wrote Ramayana before the appearance of Lord Ramchandra. Again, another amazing consideration. How is it possible? Because he just saw the pastimes of the Lord in the heart. In this way it is said that there are three types of pastimes of the Lord. One pastime is what is going on in the spiritual sky. Another pastime that is going on when the Lord appears on the material nature. Another kind of pastime is the pastime that goes on in the heart of a devotee. Though all three are authentic pastimes of the Lord. The devotees don't imagine things in his heart. He sees the pastimes, the activities of the Lord, because they, due to their purity, become transported to the spiritual sky and see the activities of the Lord. So that is how a pure devotee writes about the pastimes or activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I just noticed, just the introduction took me about 1 hour. So I was considering, I was telling Rupanuga, I don't know whether he announced it, this morning session is for 2 hours, this session. And I was considering, we'll speak for 1 hour, then give 15 minutes break, and then start for another. Should I do that or should I just continue? How many of you are in favor of continuing? Okay, then let me continue. You're not getting bored, yeah? You're not getting tired. You're not falling asleep. Okay, very good. So Valmiki actually wrote Ramayana. It begins with Valmiki. One day when he was in his ashram, Narad Muni came to Valmiki ashram. So Valmiki offered obeisances. Because you remember, who is Narad Muni? What is the relationship between Valmiki and Narad Muni? Valmiki is a disciple of Narad Muni. Valmiki previously was a dacoit, Dashu, Ratnakar. His business was to kill people and rob them. And one day, Narad Muni was passing by. Actually, we have to understand that Narad Muni decided to bestow his mercy upon him. So Narad Muni was passing by and Valmiki caught him. And he wanted to rob him. So Narad Muni asked him, "Why do you want to rob me? Why are you doing that? Don't you realize it's a very sinful act?" So Ratnakar, the bandit, the dacoit, told him, "Yes, I know it's sinful, but I am doing it to maintain my family." He said, "Fine, you may be doing it to maintain your family, but what about the sin? You have to suffer the consequences of your sin." He said, "Well, my sin will be shared by my family members because I am doing it for them." So Narad Muni said, "Are you sure about it?" So he said, "Yes, because I am doing it for them. Whatever I am doing, it's for their sake." So Narad Muni said, "Then why don't you go and ask your family members and see what they say, whether they are prepared to accept your sin." And Ratnakar said, "Oh, now you've an excuse to run away from here. You're sending me home." And he said, "No, I won't run away. You tie me up on a tree and go and ask." So he went and asked his wife, "Do you know how I maintain you all? I rob people, I kill people. And I'm sure you'll share my sin that is involved." She said, "Why should I share your sin? It's at the time of marriage, you took the responsibility to feed me. How you feed me is your business." So in this way, he asked his wife, he asked his father, he asked his mother, and no one was prepared to take his sin. So then he came to his senses. So he went and fell at the feet of Narad Muni. And then Narad Muni told him that just chant the name of Ram. So he just did that. He left everything and just started to chant the holy name of the Lord. And as a result of that, he chanted with such intensity, such attention that he lost his external consciousness completely. And he had been chanting for so long that there was an anthill grew over his body. And the Sanskrit expression for an anthill is Balmik. And that's how he got the name Balmiki. Because an anthill grew around him. Now in this respect also I remember one thing, that a common anecdote goes in this respect, that when Narad Muni asked him to chant the name of Ram, Ratnakar was so sinful that he could not pronounce the name Ram. So Narad Muni told him, okay, then you chant Mora Mora. The dead. Mora means dead. You chant Mora Mora. Now Mora becomes Ram. But first thing is that this is not from Valmiki Ramayan. This is not from any authentic Ramayan. It is just a concocted story from a Bengali Ramayan, which was written by a Shakta. And you know what Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said about that? That this expression, mora for dead, is not a Sanskrit expression. It's a Bengali expression. So at that time, no one was speaking Bengali. Narad Muni and Valmiki did not consult with in Bengali language. They consulted in Sanskrit. So in this way he defeated that concept. That's not true. But anyway, all kinds of things get introduced by unscrupulous people to establish their, to fulfill their agenda. So sometimes I hear that people say this story, but taking the instruction from Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, I just want to remind you all that this is not a bona fide narration. So anyway, now as a result of that, Valmiki became a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. Now, one day Narad Muni came to Valmiki's ashram. So Valmiki just told him that you are the knower of the truth. Now, is there any personality present on the planet who is most powerful, yet he is most compassionate? He is not at all affected by anger. There is no streak of violence, violent tendencies in him. Yet, he strikes fear in the hearts of the demigods. He is most beautiful. His feature is most beautiful. His activities are immaculate. He is endowed with all good qualities. Is there any such person living on the planet? Now, what is the purpose of Valmiki's question? Valmiki was asking Narad Muni, is the Supreme Personality of Godhead present on the planet? Who else but the Supreme Personality of Godhead is endowed with these qualities? I mean, there's a list of qualities that he mentioned. And so, Narad Muni said, yes, there is a personality. His name is Ram. He is the son of King Dasharath. He is reigning, he is ruling over the earth planet from his kingdom in Ayodhya. He hails from Ikshaku dynasty. The Ikshaku dynasty is reigning over this planet since time immemorial. Ikshaku is the son of Vaivashyata Manu. Vivashan is the sun god and his son is Vaivashyata Manu. Vaivashyata Manu's son is Ikshaku. And in this line, in this family line of Surya Vamsa, because it is coming from Suryadev, Vivashvan, this dynasty is known as Suryavamsa. So in the Suryavamsa, this personality has appeared as the son of King Dasharath. So in this way, Narad Muni told him about Ramchandra. And after hearing that, Valmiki felt a great urge to write about this personality. And I don't want to go into details. Something happened, actually, anyway, let me just, since it came up. When Valmiki was contemplating like that, he saw a pair of crane who were in the middle of copulation was all of a sudden hit by a hunter's arrow. And the male crane died in that state. So seeing that, Valmiki's heart was so afflicted that he chastised that hunter. That how could you act in such an heinous way? And as a result of that, you will never find any peace in your life. It came out as a curse, but it came out in the form of a poetry. So at that time, Valmiki started to wonder, why did I curse this person? But at that time, when he was lamenting like that, Brahma came to him and told him that there was a purpose. Don't lament. This poet, this form of expression that came out of your mouth, in this meter and in this rhyme, you describe the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra. So therefore, Valmiki is known as original poet, the Adi Kavi. The original poet. He is actually the first one to present things in a poetry. So, he began to narrate Lord Ramchandra's pastimes in a beautiful poetry. And that is the Ramayana. So, the story unfolds in this way. Ramchandra's pastimes unfolds in this way. That Lord Ram's father Dasharath, he was an extremely powerful king. He was ruling over the entire earth planet. His city of Ayodhya, which was built by Manu, his capital, was actually built by Manu, Swayambhuva Manu, on the bank of Saraju River. He was ruling over the entire earth planet. He was extremely powerful. He was so powerful that sometimes the demigods would come and ask him to join them in their battle against the demons. So even the demigods used to seek for his assistance in the wars against the demons. So Dasharath was such a powerful, such an opulent king, but his heart was not happy. His heart was afflicted because he didn't have any son. So one day he decided to perform a sacrifice, a horse sacrifice, in order to get a son. So the kings, actually this is also another sign of wisdom. He won't decide independently. Whenever he would make a decision, he would call his ministers and the prominent citizens and senior family members, and he'll consult with them. So although he decided to perform a horse sacrifice for the sake of getting a child, but he called all the family members. I mean, all his ministers, his guru, Vasishtha and Bamdev, and senior citizens, and all, or not senior citizens, important citizens. And he had a he had an assembly. And in that assembly, he expressed his desire. So everyone was very happy to hear that. He said, please do that. We all give you our blessings. But at that time, his minister, his chief minister, Sumantra, called him aside. And he said, long time ago, Sanat Kumar, one of the four Kumars, one of the first sons of Brahma, narrated that you will get four sons. When Rishyashringa Muni, a son of Bibhandak Muni, performs the sacrifice. So Dasharatha immediately made arrangement to get Rishyashringa Muni, a very exalted, powerful sage, and he went there and proposed to him, and he agreed to perform the sacrifice. So he came and performed the horse sacrifice. And after performing the horse sacrifice, Rishyashringa told Dasarath that although we have successfully conducted the horse sacrifice, but I will suggest that you perform another sacrifice called Putreshti Yajna for the benefit of the child, Putra, son. In order to get sons, one can perform this sacrifice. So he asked him to perform that sacrifice. So when that sacrifice was performed, from the sacrificial fire, one personality appeared with beautiful feature, with dark complexion, decorated with beautiful ornaments, crowns and jewels, dressed in yellow, and he announced that he was the representative of Vishnu, Narayan. And he came with a pot of sweet rice, and he gave it to Dasharatha and told him that you please offer it to your queens. Dasharatha had three queens, Kaushalya, Sumitra and Kaikeyi. So Dasharatha then took the pot of rice, sweet rice, and gave half of the sweet rice to Kaushalya. He gave 1/4 to Sumitra, then 1/8, he divided it into half, and he gave that half, which means 1/8, to Kaikeyi, and he gave the remaining 1/2 of that is 1/8, to Sumitra again. Then as a result of that, after 12 months of pregnancy, Kaushalya gave birth to a son. And soon after that, Kaikeyi gave birth to a son. And 2 days after that, Sumitra gave birth to a twin. And on the 13th day, Vasishtha Muni gave their names. Kaushalya's son was known as Ram. Sumitra's two sons were known as Lakshman and Shatrughna. And Kaikeyi's son was known as Bharat. So, in this way, Dasharatha received these four sons. All four sons actually looked alike. And they were extremely attached to each other. Especially Lakshman was very, very attached to Ram, and Shatrughna was very attached to Bharat. Then when Ram became 14 years old, Dasharatha was consulting with Vasishtha about getting Ram married. And then when they were consulting around that time, Vishwamitra, another very powerful sage, appeared there in the palace. So Dasharatha immediately, as soon as he got the news that Vishwamitra came, he immediately got up from his throne and went and met him and offered obeisances to him, brought him into the court and asked him to sit on the throne. And he told him that, please tell me, what can I'm so fortunate that you came to my palace today, came to my house today. Please tell me, what can I do for you? How can I serve you? And so then Vishwamitra told him that in his ashram, which is known as Siddhashram, he is performing some sacrifices, but there are some rakshasas headed by Marichi, Maricha and Subahu. They're causing a lot of disturbance. They're spoiling the sacrifice. Now, in order to kill those demons, he wants Ram to come with him. Now, Dasarath was so attached to Ram that when he heard that Vishwamitra wanted Ram to go and fight with these demons who are so powerful, he felt that in there Ram will die if he went there. So just with the thought that Ram, who is just 14 years old, did not even complete his military education, did not have any experience in a battle. So this inexperienced boy, how is he going to confront this rakshasas? So he fainted out of anxiety. And in this way, when he came back to his senses, then he started to plead to Vishwamitra that, please don't take Ram. Let me go with you. I will go with my soldiers, with my army, and I will deal with the rakshasas. But Vishwamitra told him that, look, if I wanted you to come and deal with the rakshasas, I would have told you. I don't want you, I want Ram. So, at that time Dasharath was so afflicted, he lost his senses. He said, no, I can't let Ram go, I can't let Ram go. Then Vishwamitra became very angry. He said, what kind of person you are? You come and tell me that you are going to fulfill all my desires. You asked me how you could serve me, and when I tell you what I wanted from you, you refuse to give me. And as a result of that, you lose all your pious activities. And not only all your pious activities, for your entire generations, their pious activities will be lost because of this deed of misdeed of yours. And Vishwamitra became so angry that the whole earth started to tremble at that time. Whole earth started to shake. So Vasishtha took Dasarath aside. Vasishtha is Dasarath's spiritual master. So Vasishtha told him that, look, you have promised something, now you fulfill it. Because if you don't do that, it will be a gross act of sin. And don't worry, Vishwamitra is an extremely powerful person himself. When he was a king, Vishwamitra previously was actually a Kshatriya king. When he was a king, by pleasing Lord Shiva, he received all the celestial weapons. So don't worry, he will give all those weapons to Ram. Plus he will empower Ram. And as a matter of fact, if Vishwamitra wanted, he could have killed those demons himself. But because he has accepted the vow of non-violence, he has become a Brahmana, he doesn't want to resort to violence. So don't worry, Vishwamitra will give Ram all protection. Don't try to displease him by not fulfilling his request. So let Ram go with him. So upon Vasishtha's advice, Dasarath agreed to let Ram go. And Ram and Lakshman were inseparable. So when Ram was sent, Lakshman also went with him. So Vishwamitra took Ram and Lakshman and they walked on foot at the evening, at the day, end of the day, they came to the bank of the Tamasa River, and there he told Ramchandra to go take a bath and come back to him. And then he gave two mantras called Bala and Atibala. And he told, as a result of these two mantras, you will never feel any fatigue. You'll never feel he won't be affected by old age. And you will have inconceivable strength. And you will be extremely wise. So in this way he endowed Ramchandra. And at the end he said that I know that you already have all those. But just for the sake of formality, I'm just giving it to you. Because Vishwamitra knew who Ramchandra is. So did Vasishtha. They knew that the Ramchandra is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So then, after traveling further the next day, they came to a place which was completely desolate, a deep, dense forest. So Ram asked, what is this place? Just the place instills fear in the heart. So I'm wondering, what is this place? So then Vishwamitra told that after Indra killed Vritrasura, the demigods, in order to free him from his sinful reactions, brought him to this bank of the Ganges. And here, after bathing him, they got rid of all the sins of Indra. This place is where the sins of killing Vritrasura was deposited by Indra. And as a result of that, Indra blessed this place, that this place will become full of prosperity. And as a result of that, two very prominent cities appeared, known as Karusha and Malada. Which Malada means the place where mal, the impurities, were given. So this is the place where the impurities were deposited, but at the same time, this place became full of auspiciousness because of the blessings of Indra and the demigods. Now it became a very prosperous city, but eventually a demoness, a Rakshasi called Taraka, came here and she started to create so much disturbance and killing so many people that all the residents of these cities ran away from here. And since then, this place will become completely desolate. And Taraka actually reigns over this place. Now, I want you to kill Taraka. And this Taraka is the mother of Maricha, one of the demons who was causing disturbance in Vishwamitra's ashram. So, Ram, getting that order, he just strung his bow and he pulled his bowstring. Now this bowstring created such a sound that hearing that sound, Taraka just came out rushing to find out what actually is happening. So, and the fight ensued between Ram and Taraka, and finally Vishwamitra told him, Ram was actually reluctant to kill this demoness. He told Lakshman, the first one that I'm going to kill as a Kshatriya is a woman. So I don't want to do that. Let me disfigure her and make her ineffective. But Vishwamitra said, no, just kill this demoness. As it is getting dark, her power will increase. So don't waste any more time. So Ramchandra then took one very powerful arrow, placed it on his bow, and that blazing arrow went and pierced Taraka's heart, and she died. Then Vishwamitra finally arrived with Ram and Lakshman in his ashram called Siddhashram, and he explained that this is the place where Vamandev used to reside. So that was his ashram. So then he started his sacrifice. Ram and Lakshman were guarding the area to protect it from all the demons, from causing disturbance. For 6 days, the sacrifice went on unhindered. But on the seventh day, the whole atmosphere became still. And they could see that there was a ominous silence all around. And then they heard the roaring sound all of a sudden. And then they saw these demons are coming. Maricha and Subahu, two terrible demons, two accomplices of Ravan. So, before they could even pollute the sacrificial area by throwing stool and urine and meat and blood, that's what the demons do. So Ram just shoot an arrow which struck Marichi. And that arrow made him fly for 400 miles and landed him in the middle of the ocean. With another arrow, he killed Subahu. And with the third arrow, Ram killed all the associates of Marichi and so all the other Rakshasas there. So Vishwamitra then successfully completed his sacrifice and blessed Ramchandra profusely. All the assembled sages started to sing the glory of this young prince. And the next day, they all told Ram that we are going to Mithila to witness a sacrifice conducted by King Janak. And they invited Ram to come. And they also told that Janak has a bow of Lord Shiva. So as a Kshatriya, Ram was very keen to see that bow. Just like the military people like to see the different weapons, Ram wanted to see the bow. So they arrived in Janak's palace, and in Janak's palace they saw this. Vishwamitra actually told, Janak received Vishwamitra with great respect and honor. And then he asked, who are these divine looking princes? So Vishwamitra introduced them that this is Ram and this is Lakshman, two sons of King Dasarath. They came here to see the bow of Lord Shiva, known as Hara Dhanu. Hara is the name of Lord Shiva. Dhanu means a bow. The bow of Lord Shiva. They wanted to see. So then Janak said, yes, this bow was made by Vishwakarma for Lord Shiva. And when Lord Shiva was insulted in Daksha's Yajna, Lord Shiva took up this bow and he wanted to wipe out all the demigods. Because they refused to give him the portion of the sacrifice. So then all the demigods pleaded to him to give up his anger. And then Lord Shiva gave the bow to the demigods. And then the demigods gave the bow to King Devaratha, who was the son, who was the descendant of King Nimi. In Bhagavatam, you come across Nimi Navajogendra Sangbad. Navajogendras advised Nimi. They mentioned Kaler Doshe Nidhe Rajan Asti Hieko Mahanguna Kirtana Deva Krishnasya Mukta Sangha Param Brajet. So that King Nimi's descendant was Devaratha. And Devaratha was the forefather of King Janak. And in this way, in the family, this bow of Lord Shiva was there.
And Janak described that he got a daughter in a very divine way when he was preparing the ground for sacrifice with a plow. Then from the tip of the plow, from the earth, this girl appeared. This little girl appeared. And since she appeared from the tip of the plow, the tip of the plow is known as Sita. So that's why her name was given as Sita. And he saw from her symptoms of some inconceivable divinity in her. So Janak considered that this girl shouldn't be married to just any ordinary person. She should have an exceptional personality. Which means Janak recognized that this daughter of his is Lakshmi Devi. Now who should Lakshmi Devi be married to? Lakshmi Devi should be married to Vishnu, Narayan. Therefore he made a condition that if anybody can string the bow of Lord Shiva, then only he can have Sita. So many princes came, kings came, but none of them succeeded. So he told Ram that if you want, you can try to string the bow. So when the bow was brought, you know how that bow was brought? It was brought in a cart with 16 wheels. And it was pulled by 500 men. Strong men. Of Treta Yuga. Ramchandra opened beautifully decorated box and placed his left hand, with the left hand he held the middle of the bow and very easily he pulled it out of that box. And then he bent it, strung the bow, and then he pulled the bow to such an extent that the bow snapped. That bow was so powerful that when it cracked, it sounded like 1,000 thunderbolts just fell at one moment. Simultaneously, 1,000 thunderbolts just cracked. Everyone there fainted, except Janak, Vishwamitra, Ram and Lakshman. So then Janak decided to offer Sita to Ram. The message was sent to Dasharath about the good news that Ram has won Sita by breaking the bow of Lord Shiva. And so Dasharath was requested to come to get them married in their wedding. So after 4 days, Dasharath arrived and the wedding took place with great pomp and grandeur. Janak had another daughter and her name was Urmila. So Urmila was offered to Lakshman. And Janak's brother had two daughters. One is Mandavi and Shrutakirti. They were given to Bharat and Shatrughna respectively. So all four girls were now married to these four sons of King Dasharath. So after the wedding, they were traveling back to Ayodhya, and on the way all of a sudden the whole atmosphere became very very fearful. It instilled fear in the hearts of everyone, as if something ominous is going to happen. And Dasharath also saw that some animals were passing from left to right. Some birds were flying, which were actually indicating inauspicious signs. And so he asked Vasishtha. Then Vasishtha said, "Don't worry, although the inauspicious signs are there, but I can see that the animals are moving from right to left to right, so which is a auspicious sign. So although something will happen, but ultimate end will be beneficial." So then all of a sudden they saw a fierce looking personality whose complexion was like copper. Dark complexion, and his hair was matted hair was like blazing fire. He had an axe on his right shoulder, and he had a bow and arrow in his left. So just by seeing him, everybody recognized that this is the fear of the Kshatriyas. Parashuram, who wiped out the Kshatriyas for 21 times. He made the planet devoid of Kshatriyas 21 times. Because the Kshatriyas became tyrannical. The Kshatriyas deviated from the path of Dharma. So in order to rectify them, he is an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Shakta Veshavatar. So Parashuram just appeared there. And seeing him, Dasharath became very, very afraid. He told him that, "Look, you have taken a vow after wiping out of the Kshatriyas for 21 times. You have promised that you are now not going to resort to violence anymore. You have offered the earth planet to the Brahmanas and you went away to perform austerities in Mahindra mountain. So please spare us." But Parashuram did not pay any heed to Dasharath's plea. He went straight to Ram and he said, "I heard that you broke the bow of Lord Shiva. So here I have the bow of Vishnu. Now let's see how powerful you are. Take the bow. If you can string this bow and shoot this arrow, then I'll consider that you are fit to fight with me. So if you can do that, then I'll challenge you to a fight." So Dasharath was extremely worried because everybody knew who Parashuram was, and he was afraid of the safety of Ram. But Ram was completely composed. But at that time he became very grave. He took the bow from Parshuram's hand. And when he took the bow from Parshuram's hand, he also took the power that he invested in Parashuram and took that away also. He took that power that he invested in. He was Shaktavish. Where did Parshuram get the Shakti? The power. How did he become empowered? With the power of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So now that the mission has been accomplished, the power is now withdrawn from him. So he took that power away from Parashuram. At that time everybody could see that Parashuram lost all his luster. His body became pale. He looked weak and frail. And he became nervous. But Ram took the bow, he strung the bow, and he placed the arrow on the bow, and he told Parshuram, because you are a Brahmana, and you are a descendant of Vishwamitra, I will not kill you. Your relative Vishwamitra, I won't kill you. But I will take away all the result of your austerities and penances. With the austerity and penance, you were supposed to go to the heavenly planet. And I am taking away that possibility of going to the heavenly planet. Because of why? Although Ram didn't say, what was the reason? Because of your challenging the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And saying that, Ram released the arrow. The arrow took away all of Parashuram's ascetic power and went to the depth of the earth, went all the way to Patala Loka, and then came back to Ramchandra. Then Ram gave that bow to Varun to keep. And in this way, then they went back to Ajodhya. And in this way, the first kanda of the seven of the first kandas of Ramayana ends, which is known as Balakanda or Lord Ramchandra's childhood pastimes, you can say. Hare Krishna, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yes? Can you have that? Yes. Vishwamitra's and Parshuram's, Vishwamitra's father and Jamadagni, that is how they are two sisters from the mother's side, they were related.